Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
What's going on, No Bad Dog Army? This is a, I think, a really good podcast on a lot of different levels of, like, what do we do when dogs are freaking out in the crate? But it's more than that. It's what do we do when a dog is doing something that they shouldn't be doing? That's like the first line of defense. I go, okay, you know, this is one of those situations. I'm looking at the big picture. I'm looking at the cause of the things, right? So this is a dog that's biting his tail in the crate and being restless and trying to figure life out. And what do we do? What's the quick fix? Well, there is no quick fix. We need to look at what's going on with the dog's mental state of mind. What's the schedule like? How much exercise? How much mental exercise? We talk about the two different tanks of dogs. Every dog has the two different tanks, guys, like the mental tank, the physical tank. Every dog wakes up with that just like we do. Are we exerting these things? We have to know our dogs. We have to know what they need. And so this is a good one, and I hope you guys enjoy this, and I think it's going to be helpful for you guys. And so enjoy this podcast, and I'll talk to you next time.
Hello.
Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Awesome. I've got my friend Katarina, who's also my dog trainer with me, just so you know.
Cool. Nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you. So I was thinking, I just kind of typed up like a really long synopsis. Is it okay if I just read that to you?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Awesome. So thank you so much, Tom, for meeting with us. My friend Katarina is with us as well, and she owns her own dog training company where she has classes and an in-home board and train. I have been a fan of yours for 5 years, and I love listening to your podcast. I have learned so much from you, and I'm really grateful for your free content. I booked this consultation for my youngest pup, Luca. I will first give you a background on my other two huskies, and then I will go through Luca's life. I have 3 purebred Siberian huskies that I got from the same accredited breeder. She breeds for temperament, and her breeding lines have amazing temperament. My oldest, Timber, is 5, Ruby is 3, and Luca is 1. Ruby and Luca are confirmation dogs and are intact, because to be a show dog, they have to be intact. And then Timber is intact as well. I had wanted to show Timber, but I taught him to sit as a pup, and it was too hard to break him from that. Timber was my first dog ever. I got him right at 8 weeks old, and he taught me a lot. I socialized him as a pup to everything, took him everywhere, crate trained him, took him to multiple classes, and did private lessons with Katarina last fall to introduce an e-collar, as around mealtimes he would get anxious, which in the past has led to aggression. That's actually how I found you on YouTube. Timber has matured to be a pretty laid-back adult and puts up with Ruby bossing him around. I got Ruby when she was a little bit older, around 4 months, and began confirmation training with her at an early age. I socialized her a lot too and have won some ribbons with her in dog shows. When she goes into heat, she is gone for a month. I plan on finishing her, I think it's the grand champion, whatever, 15 points is this summer, and getting an ovary sparing spay next winter. Ruby is a very loving and sweet girl. She is very bossy, and she likes to have an invisible radius around her from the boys. If they break the invisible radius, she will snarl at them. I feed all of my dogs a raw diet, 80% meat, 10% bone, 10% organ. I also work with a holistic vet yearly for a second opinion. A little bit about my training. I do not feed my dogs table scraps. They are not allowed on furniture. They are crated when I leave. When company is around, they are on a place bed, in a crate, or free range if they are calm, and they are not allowed to jump on people. I do not believe in dog parks, flexi leashes, harnesses, or leash greetings with other dogs. Timber and Ruby do not play with other dogs as they just are too much of a pack, and Luca only plays with other dogs at Katarina's being her personal dogs because she's like obviously good at reading the body language of dogs and stuff. Timber, they can be around other dogs though, as long as they have space, so it's not like they're reactive at all. A little dog once got too close to Ruby and she did not like that. She didn't hurt the dog, but I was able to pull her back. Their prey drive obviously for huskies is very high. Ruby has killed multiple bunnies. At home when I am chilling, I usually have Luca on a place bed and Timber and Ruby are free range, only having the kitchen blocked off. They all do really well together at home. They lounge around and can lay by each other often. Ruby, even Ruby who has the radius. I used to do doggy daycare, but have been preferring having a dog walker come to my house daily instead when I work because I'm a special education teacher who takes them on individual walks. When they are being fed, they are in their crates or a gate is dividing them and I feed them in age order. So the main reason for the call is Luca. So this is a synopsis of his life. Luca was intended to be my dad's puppy and he was one of the more timid pups in the litter. We carefully picked one that would get along well temperament-wise with my other two dogs. Luca came home at 8 weeks old and began going 2 times a week to a puppy socialization program immediately where he was exposed to items, textures, sounds, and people. My dad worked weekends, so Luca stayed with me and my other two huskies 2 nights a week because we also wanted to make sure that they could all get along. 2 months after getting him, we were told by the socialization place that he was not always listening to other dogs' cues and signals while playing and at times needed human correction / redirection. We also noticed him being shy when approached by people, so I reached out to Katarina for some support. Luca began attending weekly daycare training with her, where they worked on confidence building, exposure, socialization, and an overall calm mindset. We had a couple of sessions with Katarina where we worked on exposure in a public place, greetings, and discussed crate trainings as Luca was having a tough time. 4 months after coming home, Luca attended a puppy obedience class with Katarina and 4 other dogs, never interacting nose-to-nose, where we worked on impulse control, leash manners, down, place, object exposure, etc. Unfortunately, the last few sessions are when we realized my dad was really sick.
I'm just going to take over for Maggie reading.
Sure.
Sorry. That's 5 months after coming home, Maggie's dad was diagnosed. Okay, Maggie. Maggie's dad was diagnosed with inoperable aggressive terminal brain cancer. He had a glioblastoma. He was right off the bat, you know, not himself. The tumors were frontal lobe tumors. So when she shares that information, like she just wants to recognize that her dad wasn't the real him for a while. Very loving and kind, you know, but it's something that where she knew like he was off for a while and, you know, he may have forgotten to feed Luca or wasn't being consistent with him during training. He would just forget those things because of the brain cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, Maggie worked with him and talked with him, you know, every day. She'd bring over the raw food and portion that and everything like that. So she kind of knew a lot of what was happening, but she wasn't always with Luca and her dad. Her dad has since passed.
Yeah.
So, so Maggie has Luca now full time. After his the cancer diagnosis with her dad, Luca did come with me for a few weeks just to give everyone a break and have a little bit more, you know, stability in the house and stuff. Maggie was a caregiver for her dad. You know, he sometimes forgot about the dogs or had no interest in them.
He moved in with me.
Yeah, sorry. Yep, he moved in with Maggie, and so all the dogs and him were here. He became kind of an angry person. There was often tension in the house due to the tumors. And, you know, we just bring that up because we do believe it is, you know, potential contribution to, you know, where the dogs are at and Luca's progress and, you know, his growing up. After her dad moving in, leaving Luca in his crate alone was always really bad, even just for like an hour. They would come home and he was peeing, pooping, pacing, couldn't settle, barking, howling, whining. He did then come to me for a 3-week board and train.
Before that, though, we did some work at our house.
Yeah, I came over for a few lessons and started him on the e-collar for Luca. Working on his crate manners, you know, having an open door, having him lie down in there, be calm in there, leaving the house and being outside and watching him on a camera, things like that. We would, you know, if he broke his down in the crate, we would use the e-collar. We use the mini educator from e-collar technologies. Mm-hmm. And then through that, Luca still continued to have accidents and pace. Then we did that 3-week board and train. We moved him from the mini educator to the boss, still through e-collar tech. And what ended up happening is we did end up putting him in a smaller Rufflin crate. Like, it's pretty small. Like, he can't stand up in it, basically, which sounds kind of bad. He can turn around. He can get in there and turn around. But that has deterred him from pottying in the crate. Mm-hmm. However, he's still kind of
howling
and, you know, now he's trying to find things to chew on in there and things like that. Maggie's father did pass early October. And then after the funeral for her dad, Luca did come back home to her. They began rebuilding a routine and getting, you know, used to each other. She has Luca on a place bed when they're chilling in the living room. If she can't see all three of hers, or if she's, you know, running to a different part of the house, she briefly puts Luca in a crate or puts up a gate to kind of block him from Timber and Ruby. Luca began going through kind of a fear period where he's been scared to say hi to people in public and a little bit more timid of noises. We've been continuing to do exposure with that and getting him out more, you know, saying no to people coming up to his space and just letting him kind of get used to the space and exposure and sounds. Maggie had the dogs out playing fetch one day, and Timber got too close to Luca, and Luca went after Timber. She peeled him off of Timber, and they haven't played with the ball together after that. She did try it again and would stim if he was, you know, eyeing or growling at Timber over the ball.
And then 3 weeks after coming home and getting in a new routine, the dogs got in a scrap, which I take full responsibility for. I was getting treats out of the fridge, which is something I had done in the past because I wanted them to work on taking treats together. And I was grabbing the treats so I could take them outside, and then when I call them in, I would give them one, just because Ruby has not been e-collar trained yet and she needs some motivation to come inside at times. So I didn't really see exactly what happened, but Luca and Timber started to get in a fight. I pulled Luca off of Timber, and Timber continued to snarl, and he was in like a feral phase. So I was like talking to him, and he was able to calm down. So I put him in an area, and I put a nearby gate to keep him away. So I thought right away I should take away the source of the problem. And just as I went to do that, Luca, I didn't see what happened, but I believe Luca went after Ruby. And again, I was able to get him off of her. And unfortunately, he did bite Ruby where she needed to get stitches. 6 weeks after coming home, Luca got his e-collar strap in his ruffling crate just because we kept it on, hoping that he'd have that mindset of like, wow, at any point I could get stimmed if I'm having a fit. And it wouldn't catch on anything because the ruffling crates don't have anything for it to catch on. But he somehow got his collar and chewed part of it. Thankfully, we were able to have him vomit it up. He also did chew off part of his tail. And then at this point, I just was like, I think it would be really good to contact Tom. So in summary, I've also started to give him like a stimulating toy before I leave for work. So he has to work for some treats alone. But in summary, Luca is a more timid dog who does not like being alone, crated or not. He has bit my female dogs and at times pushes my male to his breaking point. Luca had a very difficult upbringing his first year due to my father's illness and me caregiving, and now I'm trying to create consistent routines for him with clear expectations. After listening to your podcast, I believe that Luca did not know who his leader was before and during my dad's illness. Thus, he tried to be the leader and was very insecure. I believe now he is trying to accept that I'm the leader and find his place in our pack. I think he may be in a fight or flight when it comes to the resource guarding, and I wonder if this could be from inconsistencies with my father who was sick. So, yeah.
Okay. That's a lot. So
yeah, lots of that. Yeah.
Yes, a lot. So the big concern right now is it seems like with Luca, and it seems like Luca has gotten in with it with both Timber and Ruby as well. So it's not it's not really super consistent about who we're going after and when. So
and
what?
They
so
play fine though. Strange.
Yeah. So what is your? Here's something. What is your question here? What can I help you with?
Like what? I'm just curious, like what your thoughts are, like with the crate especially, because he still is really struggling with that. And like, I guess at home, like what should I be doing to help create a better environment, or like what training wise we should be working on with Luca?
Okay. I think from what I've heard, I think that we have to, I think you're doing all the right things as far as structure goes. I know in the crate, I heard a couple different things of him spinning and getting anxious and chewing on his tail and blah, 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 and just being kind of a menace in there. We can talk about that in a minute. The other things are, is like, you guys already know that there's some sort of resource guarding going on. So I think that's really covered. You know that if you bring in something that is high value, such as like you were saying, the food, the potential toys and things like that, that there could be issues. So that's an easy thing to just delete. Like we don't do any of that stuff. Like that's something that is all human error. So that's all just, I mean, that's an easy thing that you guys can work out. Like, hey, this is what we need to do. We can't, you know, we can't have, these things around because then the dogs are going to have a potential, reaction. So it's important that you, you know, moving forward are mindful of that. And that's, again, that's not really, I know that you said with Ruby that the reason why you had treats that one time is because she's not on the e-collar yet. So she still needs that food motivation, but those are things that you can still avoid. Like, hey, I'm going to get the other dogs in cause they listen. And then Ruby, I can so all of that stuff is all human stuff. That's all like just errors that you guys can work out. But I would just say my advice on that is keep, I mean, it sounds like you're doing all the right things. I would just be mindful when you have the three, they're all intact, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So when you have three animals that are intact living with each other, it could get, you know, pretty tense at some points. Right. So I just think like doing what you're already doing from what you've told me is the kind of the crate and the routines and the exercise and the walks and all that stuff sounds good and the e-collar training. So I don't really have anything on that just because like you said, you already know like, hey, I knew that this was going to be a problem and I did it and it was a problem. So I don't, you know, you don't need anything from me on that. As far as the crate stuff goes, I would say, so right now when you put Luca in the crate, how long is Luca in the crate and what is Luca doing right now when we get into the crate?
So, when I leave for work, I usually will take him outside, throw the ball around, just me and him one-on-one, and then bring him inside, give him like a stimulating food toy to play with while I get dressed and ready. And then whatever food he doesn't get from it, I'll take out and then I will tell him to crate and I'll toss it in the crate once he gets in his down. And then I leave for work at about like between 7:30, 7:45, and then the dog walker comes usually between 11:30 and noon.
Okay. And so that's good. That all sounds good. So you don't have any issues there?
Nope. I mean, he does, like, I'll peek at the camera after I leave and he'll be howling or pacing around. But sometimes I check and he's just laying down and howling. And then after the dog walker, I'm usually home by like 4:15-ish, usually every day. And okay. He does go to Katarina still twice a week. So he's really only in his crate for those long periods of time, 3 times a week.
Okay, great. That's good. So what issues are you having in the crate right now? It sounds like you've kind of grinded out all the yeah. issues. You put him in the crate, he howls for a little bit, then he's fine and everything's good.
Kind of, it'll be hit or miss because I'll check at different times and he'll be moving around, scratching, howling, biting his tail. Yeah, so it's just kind of like stuff like that. And like, I'll go on the camera and I'll tell him no, and I'll tell him down. And sometimes he will lay down and then just howl. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just the, like, he just can never seem to settle in the crate. And it's just strange because my other two dogs.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Love their crate, and I don't know if it's because of his age or just with everything that happened, or I guess I'm not really sure, like, what more I can do to make his crate a place he wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes, I think, you know, you have to be fair and realistic because sometimes there isn't. Like sometimes when you put a dog into the crate, you know, they would want to be elsewhere, right? And so it's like, you know, putting a kid in timeout. They're like, I don't want to be here. You're like, I know, but you gotta. Or, you know, bringing a kid to kindergarten for the first time. I don't want it. Well, I know, but you gotta, right? So you have to also just be realistic with yourself too, to say like, okay, I'm going to put this dog in the crate because I have to go to work. Somebody's going to be over in a little bit and then I'm going to be home. And so things that you can do, I mean, let's put it into perspective like this. You put him into the crate and he starts to chase his tail and chew on his tail. It's like, okay, what can you do? Like if he is so anxious that... And I just say anxious as like a cheap shot. I don't, you know, I would just assume it's anxiety of like, yeah. Hey, I want to do something else. And now I'm just stuck here. So it kind of like, mm-hmm. Okay, I'm in this crate. I have nothing to do. I'm going to just chew on my tail. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at like, okay, what can we do? Well, we can't leave him outside of the crate. Mm-hmm. That's not an option. Yeah. So there's that gone. So we have to put him in the crate. So then you have to look at like, okay, we put him in the crate cause we have to, there's no alternative. And he starts to chew on his tail. So there's certain things that you can do, but a lot of the tail chewing is a very, like, I want to say an involuntary behavior. So it's something that, okay. It's something that the dog will just do because he's bored, right? Or he's anxious or he's whatever. And so things that you can do is, you know, potentially, like you said, you know, if you have a camera, you could tell him to leave it, but that's like really not realistic, especially when you're trying to work and do things. Like, I don't want you to have to check the camera every 2 seconds. You know, that doesn't make much sense. So then you have to look at like, okay, he's going to chew his tail. I'm not home. You know, I can't really look at the camera the whole time. They tell them to knock it off. So things that you can do to potentially desensitize these things is, and I don't know if you're doing this already, but it sounds like you're feeding them all separate, obviously, but putting them into the crate, more often while you're home, mm-hmm. Could help desensitize it. But I think at the end of the day, you put him into the crate. He doesn't want to go in the crate. He's bored. You're gone. Every minute that he's in there, he's like, okay, whatever. And it could be, like you said, he's a young dog. So it could definitely start to get better over time as he matures. But you could desensitize the potential chewing on the tail. But like I said, I want to say it's like a place of involuntary behavior a little bit, where it's not like, like if you teach a dog to heal or if you teach a dog to recall, these are things that you can practice time and time again, and then they get rewarded for it. This is something that only happens when you're not there. And so your ability to reward the dog, your ability to timely correct the dog and consistently correct the dog, and also repeat the thing. Like if you wanted to work on heal, you can go outside and your dog's going to pull you and you can work on it for an hour, right? Every time. You know, you can get that behavior. The problem with the tail chewing is it only happens under certain circumstances that you really can't predict. So that makes it difficult to work on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
So if you put them into, so if you said, hey, I need to work on this whole tail thing, it's like, all right, just let's recreate it. It's like, well, we can't really recreate it. It's like, okay, well, that's very difficult to work on something. But I mean, if you could, you know, put them into the crate while you're home, you could use the e-collar to correct them when you choose. But again, because it's kind of an involuntary, hey, I'm kind of bored, I don't really know what else to do, it's not going to be super sustainable because you're not involved, right? So, yeah. You know, it's like breaking a habit, and it's very, very difficult to break that particular habit. So, you know, suggestions are, exhaust him more. You know what, I mean, those are things I would be doing. Like if one of my personal dogs was having a really hard time, in a crate, I would be exhausting the dog more. I mean, that's what we do all the time with our boarding trains. If a dog comes in and they're just whiny and barky and just losing their minds, we do higher amounts of treadmill sessions. So instead of 15 minutes, they're on there for 45 minutes, you know, and we kind of like take the data and we say, okay, that works. We're 10 times less whiny now because we've gotten that out of the system, right? So, I mean, I'm giving you options that are things that you can do, but something like this oftentimes is something that you can't really control because, again, it's a very involuntary thing that is inconsistent when you're not around. So how do you fix something without you being there? And again, the dog is doing it out of an instinct type thing, like, I'm bored, this is what I'm going to do. So unless you fix the boredom, right, then you can't really grind it out. You can't really modify it, right? Because because here's what could happen is he gets so worked up, you correct him for it. You know, let's say you leave him in the house, you go outside, your e-collar's on, you go into the hallway or however your home is set up, outside, whatever, and then you correct him for chewing. He's like, oh, that sucked, I'm gonna stop. He stops for 15, 20 minutes, and then he goes back to it because he's like, yep, I'm still bored. So the thing, the problem doesn't get fixed and resolved, right? Like when we're teaching a dog how to heal, for an example, they're like, I'm gonna be in front of you. You correct them, you say no, you're gonna stay here, and then you're gonna get paid. And the dog's like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like there's utility here. But when you have a dog that's doing kind of an involuntary thing and you can't really reward the dog, and the dog is doing it out of complete involuntary symptoms, like does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, so that would be like my just thoughts on that. I think you've done a lot of different stuff, but you know, alternatively, it would, like, again, it would be auditing how much is going into the mental exhaustion. So I know that you said that you, and I don't know how much he's getting in particular before you leave, but you know, if you have three dogs and one of them is really struggling and tense and got a lot going on in the head, and you are saying, hey, this dog is struggling when I'm gone, then that's like the effort would go into that particular dog the most. That's where I would, okay. That's where I would put a lot of that effort, is say like, this dog is struggling. We need to, you know, we really need to put more effort into exhausting this. And then also, you know, potentially it just depends. I mean, there's a couple different options, but I think the other option would be, changing up your dog walker schedule. If you have the ability, because again, it would be, let's say, okay, hey, I'm going to work at 7:30. All the dogs have been out, walked, fed, whatever. And then by 10 a.m., 9:30 a.m., Lucas starts going to his tail, or Lucas starts howling or whatever. Then you might want to say like, okay, I have to go to work. This dog at this age, at this point in his life, is having a tough time. Can I get the dog walker to come early, or can I get the dog walker to come twice, or can I get the dog walker to stay longer? Like, these are all options I would be auditing on your end.
Yeah.
Hey, for sure. Luke is having a tough time. Can I pay you an extra, you know, whatever it is, to stay an extra 30 minutes to do treadmill or to do fetch or to do whatever? But the dog needs more than what he's telling you. The dog needs more than what he's getting. Like, he is, there is, like, again, humans, we're anxious. It's like, okay, if you're anxious, you know, you know, there's probably things that you need to think about, but also how much exercise are you getting? Like, if you're waking up every day or every day at 2 o'clock, you get super anxious. It's like, okay, how much exercise are you getting? These are things that you have to audit. And I think with dogs, like, he's telling you, like, when I used to be an animal, a dog control officer, when dogs would run away or dig under the fence and jump over the fence and blah, 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 I'd have to bring him back, and people were always like, oh, I don't know how he got out. I'm like, you're missing the point. Your dog is telling you, your dog is desperately saying, I need more than what I'm getting. This fence is bullshit. Like, I want to see the world, right? If the dog is fulfilled, the dog won't do this. So when dogs start to chew on themselves, it's typically like a destructive, I'm going to tear up the crate. I'm going to, bark, and I'm going to growl, and I'm going to do all these things out of like spite or aggression or frustration. Like, dogs who are chewing on themselves in a way that is actually causing harm, outside of obviously skin issues like hot spots and allergies and, you know, things like that. If they're doing it, the dog is clearly telling you like, hey, I am so pent up that I am going to self-harm myself. Like, I'm taking the energy that is needed to be exerted, and I'm going to put it into myself. Like, I'm willing to hurt myself, and I don't know the full details and context. I don't know if it's we're bleeding and or it's just a little bit or
no,
what.
We're not.
Okay, well,
he's just too like the fur off around the part of his tail.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, you have to weigh your options here. You know, again, it's like, the dog is, so I would just, you know, trial a couple things. I mean, for me personally, I would be putting more effort and energy into the exhaustion of that dog's mental capacity, if you can. I mean, get creative. Yeah. Waking up earlier.
I'm happy to do whatever.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, waking up earlier, telling your dog walker to come twice, telling your dog walker to stay later, whatever it takes. And then you just have to trial like, oh, okay, that worked. He's not chewing on his tail. Okay, then you have something, you know. So you have to just kind of trial these things, because some dogs are habitual, where it could be possible that no matter what you do, the dog's just going to have that tick, and that's what's going to happen. Yeah. But the first line of defense, again, if somebody says, "Hey, I'm kind of anxious and depressed and don't feel good," I'm like, "All right, let's work out, let's eat clean." Like, those are two things that, you know, everybody's like, "Oh man, I feel better, man. I just." You know, it's just, it's basic. It's like the most, you know what I mean? It's like the most basic.
Yeah.
Let's start here. So that's where I would start, is the dog is obviously saying like, hey, I have some pent up energy, some pent up mental stimulation. Yeah. So those are things I would start with.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. What else? I mean, like I said, I think, some of the issues that you guys have had with the dogs having like resource guarding and hey, that's mine, not yours. I mean, that's, I think you guys have already said and stated like, those were our faults. We're not going to do that again. So how else?
I guess
Yeah.
The other big thing is Luca's very like timid. Like, so we've been taking him, the other day we took him to a local little area, like a little local mall, and they had Santa there because he's kind of timid and shy around kids. Mm-hmm. So we just had him there. We had him in a down, and we would correct him if he broke his down just so he was exposed to everything. So I guess like with that nervous, and the thing is it's like people will walk by and he'll sniff them. Like it seems like he wants to greet them. He's just not sure. So I guess I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, like how I can be encouraging him to be open to greeting people, which like I know it's his choice. I'm obviously not going to force him. But I mean, at one point he was doing that fine, and then everything happened with my dad. And then now he's regressed to where he's nervous around strangers.
Okay. Define greeting. Like, what do you want him to do?
I guess, like, I would never force him, but, like, if he could go up and, like, sniff people or, like, let them pet him or, like, because he's a very social dog and, like, it seems like he wants to, you know, but I don't know.
Well, I would say this. I think if he wanted to, he would.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think if an animal wants to do something, they would. And I've just found that to be true so many times where we have a group of people over, we have a group of people around, we're at the mall, we're downtown, we're walking, whatever, there's people around. And in your head, you might see your dog look at somebody, wag their tail, look at somebody, sniff, look at somebody. If they are in a free, like, do what you want, you know, you're not in a sit-stay or anything, if they wanted to go and greet that person, they would. Like, I think what you're saying is you're taking this to your own emotion. I think you're saying, mm-hmm. I think that he has the potential to meet new people, and I want him to potentially meet new people. But what he's actually saying and doing is the opposite, where he's like, I'm like, so for me, as somebody who works with behavior pretty much specifically, especially with like reactive and aggressive dogs and whatever, you know, my goal is always neutrality. Like I think a neutral situation is a win. It's the best situation. And then if you get a dog that really just loves seeing people, you just kind of hit the jackpot of genetics. You're like, okay, this is great. Okay. This is a bonus. This is kind of sugar on top. So just because your dog, I mean, for me, if I had a dog that's a little bit nervous and skeptical and you know, maybe not so outgoing like some of your other dogs or your past dogs or some dogs that you see on the internet. Like, don't try to force the. And I know that you're not. I'm just saying, like, I don't want you to be too hard on yourself where you think something's wrong, just because he doesn't go and engage in people that he's looking at. Right? If he's looking at somebody, and he doesn't go up and go belly up and say, "Hey, pet me," that doesn't mean that he's not being social, and it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with him, and it doesn't mean that he's insecure or anything. It just means that he'd rather not, you know, engage into these things. Now, there's a difference between a dog like trying to run away and scraping to get away. That's different. But if you go into a situation and you have kids around, from a training standpoint and a behavioral standpoint, if there's kids around or kids, and kids are, you know, potentially a trigger for him or make him a little nervous, and he's staying there and looking and sniffing but not going up to them, that's way safer and way more important to me as a dog owner and as a trainer than the dog going to engage. Because once the dog goes to engage, that's when you get nervous, which then the dog gets nervous, and then your risk over reward goes way off the chart. So now your risk of something bad happening is like 98%, and then the reward is like two points versus almost 100 points of risk. So, you know, to go out and to be around these things and have a good experience, you know, we're not reacting, we're not growling, we're not barking, we're not running away, we're not peeing on ourselves, the dog's just being, that is the best thing that you could ask for. Because then once you start to say, "Hey, Luca, I know that you're friendly because you're friendly with me. And I know that you're friendly because you're friendly with these other people. And I'd love for you to go and kiss these kids. It's like, that's where you have to draw the line and go, that's a risk that I don't think anybody should be taking, because there's zero return. There's no point in that. Like, your dog going to engage into random people that they'll never see again, just so you can feel like, oh, okay, my dog is friendly. Like, there's no point in that, like, at all. So I would just be saying that your goal should be go out, be around these situations, but don't expect your dog to engage at a very physical level, because, and again, from a genetic standpoint, that's just like sugar on top. Like, if you can get a dog that goes out and ignores everybody, you're gold. Like, you have everything that you need to be successful. God bless. Like, that's all anybody really wants, is like, I just want to go live my life with my dog. And if they don't care about stuff, that's even better, because now I don't have to worry about them going to want to see people or reacting or getting nervous. Like, they just could care less. They have neutrality. They're like, whatever, I'll go with the flow. Perfect. So, but again, like, it is nice. It is endearing to us humans to see our dogs engage and do cutesy stuff. But that's a selfish thing from a human standpoint. And that is typically predicated off of the personality of the dog, in which we really don't have much control over.
Yeah, I think I just was thrown, because my other two dogs, well, they'll go up and they'll greet people and like they're open to that. But that is a good point, that the goal is neutrality and just being able to be there, you know?
Yeah, and just understand that every animal is so different. So, you know, you know, it's like with kids, it's like, well, you know, Timmy likes basketball, therefore Johnny must like basketball. It's like, no, that's not how that works. It's every dog is independently doing different things. They're, even if they come from the same breeding pedigrees, like, we can have an expectation of what they should be doing, but just because they're not doing what we want them to do or what we think they should be doing, outside of if you're training a therapy dog or you're training a service dog, which you're not, like, don't have these, you know, unrealistic expectations, because that's where you're going to beat yourself up over something. And I'm like, you should not, like, again, if I go out with a dog, you know, I'll let my Mastiff will be with me, and then my Shepherd, she can go out and do the kids and do the cutesy stuff. And that's fine, because she's not 150 pounds and I don't have a risk of her knocking somebody over or anything like that. Yeah. Like, so, but I'm not going back home, man, I wish Burley was more like Lakota. And it's like, they're completely like David, and like, they're so separate that, yeah. So as long as the dog isn't doing, like, so where you should get concerned, I guess I should say, because I want you to have, like, validity here moving through these situations. The only time you should get concerned that I would be like, okay, that's an issue, is, again, the dog is scraping to get the hell out of there, peeing and pooping on themselves, reacting, snarling, growling. Like, I hate this. But if your dog goes to a situation and there's all these kids and people around and they're like, yeah, this is cool, I'm just going to hang out by you, like, that is, like, hallelujah. Thank God.
Yeah.
Like, that is the best case scenario, because, like I said, that sugar on top of the dog also being like, yeah, I'll come over and say hi to you. Like, those are just, we just get lucky with that stuff sometimes. But it's not, it shouldn't be something that we have on paper of, like, if this isn't happening, then something's wrong.
That's a good way to look at it. I think part of it too is I just want, like, I just kind of beat myself up, because, like, with everything with my dad, it's like, well, did we miss this fear period, or did we not do everything we were supposed to do, you know?
No, I totally get it. I totally get it. And I just want to say, from, like, an objective opinion as a dog owner and a professional, like, if you go out and your dog doesn't want to engage in everybody, that doesn't mean something's wrong. It just means that your dog's personality is like, I mean, think about it. I mean, look how many people that we know in our lives, like, you say, oh yeah, my friend would totally do that. Or no, my friend's too shy, they wouldn't do that. That doesn't mean like, hey, what's wrong with you? It's like, they're just not that thing. You know, they're not that person. So dogs are the same way.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting, because it's like, when we are out, because I like to take him to a coffee shop. He's like constantly like watching and looking, and it's like his head's on like a little swivel, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting taking it all in. He's very aware of his surroundings.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all you can ask for. Like, hey, animal, check out what's around you. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, if there's rabbit poop, I'll go run up to that and be interested. But if there's little kids, you know, if there's little kids or there's people I don't know, I'm cool. I don't need to go say hi. I don't know them. Okay, fine. That's fine. That's cool. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Again, you know, if you were raising a therapy dog or a service dog to do a specific task where you're like, oh, I'm training I bred a service dog, it just full stop. And when I go to the mall, they shut down. Okay, that's an issue. I'm training a service dog. And when somebody walks by with a hat, they react. That's an issue. Like, you're not... And first of all, you're not getting those reactions. And second of all, you're not raising a dog that needs to have this bulletproof personality. Your dog goes out, they could care less about kids and care less. And you're like, well, the other dogs go. Like, that's so human of us to think that something's wrong in that case, when it's like, no. If your dog wanted to go say hi, your dog would go say hi, period.
Mm-hmm. I usually tell people, like, if he wants to, he'll come up to you, because they ask if they can pet him. And I'll say, well, it's up to him. And
right.
He usually doesn't, and that's fine. Yeah. People are good about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I would just say, yeah, don't beat yourself over that.
Okay.
It's too, you know, it's, you know, and you'll have, you know, future dogs in the future that'll even be completely different as well. So you just have to, you know, you can't force them, right? It's like, it's just like parenting, like with kids.
It'll act really bad.
Yeah.
Then it's like, I would never want to put him in a situation where then he would snarl and then he would snap or lunge. And then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I've watched a lot of your videos, which are awesome, where these dogs do that, you know, and then you're able to work through that, which is really neat. But I know I never want it to get to that point with my dogs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the big difference is, like, you know, again, when somebody comes in and their dog is biting people for fun, that's something we need to work on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but when a dog goes out and decides not to go engage into strangers they don't know, that's not an issue.
For sure. That's a good way to look at it.
It's a big, big difference.
For sure. I can't think of anything else. Can you?
No, I think we covered the main.
Yeah, kind of the big things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think you guys are doing, all the right things, just utilizing those e-collars, you know, because obviously you're off leash, you can touch them with, you know, in different places, which is a game changer, you know, but as far as the first line of defense for the crate stuff is desensitizing it more often, you know, while you're there. So don't make it just a, hey, when I'm gone, you're in here thing. I would say, hey, you're just you're going to be in here randomly. And then also... Yeah. The lowest hanging fruit for you is the stimulation and the output of the energy. So, those are things to really start. I mean, and just kind of like monitor. You seem like a very organized person. So, I could tell. Like, you know, you got all your ducks in a row. You take your notes. So take your notes each day to say, hey, I'm going to run Luca an additional X or whatever, or train, and the train, like I would be doing like 15 minutes of training extra. And then, you know, it depends how much time you have, 15 minutes of physical, right? So if that means getting the doggy treadmill or you're running yourself or doing fetch out in the yard or something extra just with Luca, because Luca's having the hardest time, and then doing 15 minutes of like stimulation training, which would be thresholds. So, you know, putting the dog in a sit, putting the dog in a stay, throwing their ball, throwing their treats, throwing their things on the ground, you know, all that stuff, like really getting the, so when I tell people to work their dog, all that means is test your dog. Like when you work, when you want to work your dog mentally, that just means test your dog. So that way they're not going through this mundane, same things, you know, the dogs are animals, so they need to see new stuff and they need to be challenged and they need to be tested in order to think on a different wavelength. So in order for your dog to actually think and be challenged, you need to do that. Like you need to, like, don't, like, again, the physical is good for sure, but the other half of that is the challenges. So the, you know, throw the treats on the ground, work on your leave it, throw a ball, work on your stay. Do thresholds at the door, but don't just do it once. Do it three times each. You know, do a threshold at the crate. Like, really make your dog think. And the more you make your dog think, the more exhausted they are, right? So it's just like dogs have two tanks. They have a physical tank and a mental tank. And so if in the morning they're going out, going pee and poop, and they're running for 5 minutes, and then you're putting them in the crate for 6 hours, their tank is still full. And that's why when you leave, they go, hey, I got this full tank. It's about to go over. I'm just going to exert it on myself. I'm going to chew on myself. Yeah. I'm going to do something. I'm going to dig. I'm going to bark. I'm going to scrape. I'm going to scratch. I'm going to spin. Like, that's why dogs do all that stuff, is because nobody outletted it. And this is just something I've learned just as a human. Like, we deal with this all the time. Like, I'm not like a huge health, like, workout freak. I just know if I go for a nice, steady, easy 2 mile run and I do some weights and I push myself and I get a good sweat, I am a completely different human being than if I just didn't do that. Like, if I was just like, oh, all this stuff in my head and all this energy in my body, I just kept it inside and I went to bed every night, like, I didn't exert it, I'm a completely different human. And that's just my personal experiences, but I know dogs are the same way. If I throw truck it with my shepherd, she comes back, her tail is hanging, you know, her tail is down, her tongue is hanging out of her mouth, and she sleeps for like 3 hours because she's like, oh man, that was a lot of work, you know? So I know that those walks are really important. Those play sessions are important. The brain games are important. The training is important. And that's the first thing I would do if your dog is having issues in the crate.
Okay. Do you have any recommendations for a treadmill?
Yeah, we use the Dog Pacer treadmill. Okay. There's a bunch of them out there, but the Dog Pacer is just a brand that I'm familiar with. It's not cheap, but it is, like, we've had them for years. We've had for years. It's a good investment. You may be able to find them cheaper on eBay and things, but it's just nice. Like, once we have a dog that is acclimated to the treadmill, literally, the dogs who are treadmill conditioned, if we let them off leash, they'll run over and stand on the treadmill and just sit there and wait for you to turn it on. They love it.
Oh,
yeah, they absolutely love it. Because basically, it's like, I mean, think about it. If a dog had something that can bring them on walks, like, if you get the leash out, like, if you have a routine of like, hey, at 6 a.m. we walk, you get the, I mean, I do it with my dogs. Like, I get the leash out, poop bags out, blah, blah, blah. The dog's like, oh, know what we're doing. And then you turn on the treadmill and your dog like, oh, that's my walker, right? They love it. And so it's a good investment. And the good thing about the Dog Pacer is they're not like super big. They're very narrow. They're made for dogs. Like, they don't take up a ton of space. And so if you can fit it in your life, I mean, even with the dog walker, like, hey, I'm going to, like, let's, like, for an example, from 6 to 8, you're getting up, doing your thing, getting ready for work. The dogs are doing, you know, getting their walk or whatever, getting breakfast, whatever. But then you're like, oh, I'm just going to do an extra half an hour with Luca. And then even when the dog walker comes, like, hey, before you leave, can you put Luca on like a really fast pace on the Dog Pacer? You know, get 4 miles in before you leave. And then that way he goes into the crate, he has fresh water, and he'll probably just collapse and be like, all right, I'm cool. Right. Yeah. So all those things are like natural things. You have an intact young dog that has a lot going on in his head and probably just isn't getting enough. And so if, you know, do everything. I know that you're committed to your dogs. You love your dogs. If you can commit to something that can help.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That would be, I'd be really interested to see how that works out for you.
For sure. Definitely. Well, thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. I think I'm definitely going to look into that Dog Pacer treadmill. I think that would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Check that out. Check that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that you make that to Minnesota sometime. That'd be really cool to have you around here.
Yeah. Yeah. Minnesota. Whereabouts?
Duluth.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I've been, where have I been in Minnesota?
Minneapolis, maybe. That's a big city.
Yeah. Is Menominee in Minnesota?
Yes. Or no, is that Wisconsin?
Wait, no, that's Wisconsin, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it might be right on the border. Right on the border, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess it's just almost.
Cool. City.
Yeah, we're from Duluth, so Superior is just right across the bridge from us.
Oh, cool. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's really nice talking to you guys. And
nice talking to you.
Yeah, and I wish you guys the best of luck. And sorry about your dad. I know that that's tough.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're... you know, doing everything you can, though. I mean, you're taking charge and saying, hey, this is sucky, but, you know, life throws you stuff all the time. And it really, you know, in my experience and my walks of life, I just find that what you do when shit hits the fan or when things feel like this is kind of like character building, right? And I know it's like, well, I'd rather just not have this happen. It's like, yeah, of course. But, you know, I think I've seen so many people in my life and being a human kind of just take really bad situations and just fall, right? And unfortunately, they fall into these holes, and it takes so many pieces of them, and sometimes they never recover. And I think, you know, you're doing such a good job at figuring out what you need to do and moving forward. And I know, you know, just by talking to you, that's I'm sure that's what your dad would want you to do. And I think that it takes a lot of guts and resilience to do what you're doing and just say, hey, you know, this is an unfortunate thing, but I got to push through this and I need help. And obviously you have a good system. You know, the fact that your dog trainer is willing to be by your side and help you through this is amazing. So it sounds like you got a really good team, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And you guys have a Merry Christmas, and I appreciate you. You're welcome. Thank you. And thanks for hanging out with me, and good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Tom.
All right, guys. All right. Cheers. Bye.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.